From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. I want to tell you a little bit about the hairiest person I've ever known. A retired surgeon in my hometown, an old scoutmaster of mine. He had a reputation for eating butter. He was very tall, good-looking, wore big glasses that covered half of his face. He owned a big silver canoe named Sue. He was obsessed with the stories that his scars told. His mental laser was strong, and around the campfire he plagiarized the great American cowboy poets. Now, most of these traits are irrelevant to the story I want to tell you, except for the fact that he remains the hairiest person I've ever known. And I never quite figured out what kind of corruption caused it, whether it was some kind of direct encounter with a corrupt wizard, or whether he just possessed a genetic predisposition to the universe's chaotic background radiation. Regardless, there were no hairless patches between his head and neck and back and chest, just forests of hair, wiry and gray and growing out at all angles. The same was true for his wrists and ankles. He simply lacked buffer zones between his patches of hair. It was all part of the same forest. It used to really bother me, but now, as I age, I know what causes such corruptions. Because I was born on a cloudless night, underneath the constellation of the Great Wolf. They say it gave me perception and willpower. My mother was in the prime of her life, 147 years old, and my father was nearly 200. He was a guild master, wealthy and respected, and in my youth I tried hard to become as rich and famous as him. But we quarreled, and after a bitter fight one night I ran away quietly, in the dark. I ran to a cave near my hometown. It was a spot that I found by accident one day back when I was a young gnome. Back then I'd poked my head in there, but I got scared because the tunnel seemed endless, and it felt inhabited. But this time I had no choice. I made it my home. And over time I came to know those caverns well. I found old clothing and small weapons. I killed giant rats and ate them. And one day, as I strode through the dark halls, I noticed a small ancient book on the ground, its cover cracked and dusty. I was literate, at least I thought I was. But as I looked through the pages, there was some kind of impossibility there in the writing. It confused me, and before I could protect my eyes, the perversity of these arcane runes blinded me, gave me vertigo. And so I spent the next 2 days wandering the caves in a stupor, walking into walls, falling into pits, taking myself to the brink of dehydration before I regained my senses. And this is how I knew I found something powerful. I kept the small spellbook near me at all times, and I swore to one day understand it. Each day I read, and each day I found the runes more palatable, and one day I managed to read the whole book cover to cover, and then I felt a surge of knowledge behind my eyes, my head, my fingertips. The spellbook disintegrated into dust. And so I walked with confidence to a far room where I knew a cruel old goblin to live. I kicked down the makeshift door, walked up to the goblin, and I uttered my incantation for the first time. Magic coursed from my mouth and down my arms and through my veins, and they boiled hot. Flames shot from my fingertips, and I held one hand on the old goblin's cheek and one over its heart. There was nothing before me but a pile of smoldering rags and a pittance of gold. Back then, I was without corruption. But as you know, these things take time. The surgeon was always hiring me to do odd jobs. Painting, cleaning, lawn work, etc. I was probably 14 at the time, and the surgeon was probably 60. And he paid me $10 an hour or so it was good money. And late one spring, the surgeon hired me to help him clean out his neighbor's garage, help him with the heavy lifting. We jostled around between old lawnmowers and paint cans. We arranged buckets and coiled extension cords, and he asked me what I was doing that weekend. I made up a lie. I told him I was busy. He paused long enough to make it clear that I hadn't fooled him in the slightest, and decided to make my plans for me. He said, "How about this? how about we go kayaking down at the Natchez River? Now, as a side note, I recently looked up the Natchez River in the Washington State Names Database. Natchez is a portmanteau of two native words, na, meaning turbulent or rough, and ches, meaning water. Keep this information in your head. This is foreshadowing. Anyways, back at the garage, the surgeon says to me, he says, "Let me tell you what you're doing this weekend. You're going to the Natchez River with me. I have this new kayak that you need to try out. I'll let your parents know." When my dad came to pick me up, he rolled down the window and the surgeon shared the good news. I felt dread, and it wasn't because I somehow knew that I was going to face my own mortality that weekend. It was just because I had been planning to spend my time playing computer games in my very quiet, very dry basement. My parents woke me up before dawn on Saturday and drove me to the Baptist church. The surgeon was already there, two cups of coffee in, waiting for me in his beige 15-passenger van. Some other kid's dad was there too, but compared to the surgeon, his personality was so small that I honestly only remember his faintest presence throughout the trip. Nothing more, nothing at all. So I've actually written him out of the rest of the story, though, if you choose, you can imagine the rest of it with a ghost-like third character, a background dad, if you will, a faint presence who's polite and entirely inconsequential to the plot. I sat up front in the beige van, and we drove off. The surgeon aggressively cranked the volume to the early broadcast of Weekend Edition, and we drove for several hours while the sun painted a long shadow of our van across the passing hills of wheat, while I imagined dragons swimming through the morning sky. Back then, back in middle school, I had a friend named Bloodhammer the Barbarian. We were on the math team together. Bloodhammer was super smart and funny, smarter and funnier than me, but he was short though, and so the kids picked on him. And even though we were friends, I picked on him too. I once did something most cruel to Bloodhammer, but this was back before then, back when we were closer. Some days after school, Bloodhammer and I used to walk down to the public library. There, they had rows of computers and the internet. We'd pull out stacks of floppies that we kept in our backpacks and huddle around one computer. And then we'd search the internet for games to download to take home with us. Most of the games were entirely forgettable. But once, deep on the internet, Bloodhammer and I found something different. A game that was so complex, so difficult, so unforgiving, that for a full year, we let the game rewire our malleable young brains like a virus. We carried it everywhere on our floppy disks. We created timestamp backups of our character files. And for a full year, it was all that we talked about, thought about, dreamed about, did.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
orc flesh.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Back then, I had a god. His name was Berwin. And I was a faithful servant to him. My religious awakening happened back in my youth, in the caves near my hometown. Deep in those caves, I found a large gray altar of granite in the middle of a room. And I sat there in the shadows for ages, not sure what to do with it. And then eventually I heard an unsuspecting orc wandering through the dark cavern. And as she entered the room, I waited until the altar was between us, and then I sprung out of the shadows to surprise her. The corrupt orc charged me, and blinded by rage, she stumbled onto the altar, and I knew what to do. I lifted my hands above me, and I remembered my prayers. I yelled, "Berwin, receive this gift as a sign of my piety." And then a bright light, and then the room was empty again, and I heard nothing but the pleased sound of rumbling earth. As the years passed, I repeated this over and over again, and with all species of evil, lizard men, harpies, and scores more goblins and orcs. I filled Berwin's belly so many times that unusually good fortune shined upon me. I would just look to the heavens and call in my favors, and then, instantly, whatever I wished for was in front of me. Food, power, health, or wealth, and I always felt close to my lord.
"As long as you remain loyal to me, I am always at your side."
Back then, I balanced my faith in Berwin with my other god, the one god, the almighty god, creator of heaven and earth, of all that is seen and unseen. I was pious to the one god too, but less so. My sacrifices to the one god were, I guess, softer sacrifices. I tried evangelizing to some of my friends. I reluctantly acted in the yearly Christmas pageant that my church put on. I was quite pious, at least I tried to be. But I found myself constantly inundated by the corrupting forces of the devil. He tempted me, constantly, with impure thoughts. And by age 14, my impure thoughts were mostly directed at the Sears catalog that came quarterly in the mail. Deep in the back pages of these Sears catalogs were a dozen or so glossy spreads of full-figured underwear models. And I would sometimes steal the catalog and find a quiet place to look at it. The Sears catalog. I know that's cliché, I know it's a trope, but it's true. I got my first look at the river through the driver's side window of the van. It was white and choppy, moving fast. The surgeon pulled off the van to the side of the road. We pulled the boats out of the trailer, and for the surgeon it was a tiny catamaran. I'd seen him paddle this boat before. He was nimble, and he could scoot across the river like a water skipper bug. For me, he brought a kayak. Not a normal one, but something much wider and deeper. Something that looked like if you could inflate a bathtub. He told me that it was a prototype kayak that he got for free. We pumped it full of air. Then we carried our boats down to the river's steep, rocky banks, and I pulled on my life jacket and felt the water. It was greedy and cold, but the surgeon didn't care. He'd already waded in and then back out, and then back to the van, where he changed into his wetsuit. Even from a distance, I could tell that he was still the hairiest person that I'd ever met, possibly the hairiest person in the whole world. We put our boats in the water and pushed off. I immediately ran my inflatable bathtub into a rock and flipped into the river. In middle age, I fought in the arena, four levels down in the caverns of chaos. I didn't mean to become the champion. I'd first entered those caves looking for the Chaos Gate, the source of all the universe's background corruption. I wanted to close it, shut off its corruptive force. But to be honest, I felt that I might be too late already. I felt the corruption taking hold of me. I got these debilitating headaches from time to time, and my saliva became increasingly acidic. Large, unnatural scabs formed on my hands. But I still mostly resembled my young self, and I became determined to be a hero. I just always expected that to happen down deep in the caves, down at the Chaos Gate, not at this dingy old arena. But I found a lot of glory in that arena. They used to call me the champion. And it wasn't just a platitude. I earned it. There in the arena, hundreds would watch me fight. Sure, the lesser beasts were easy, but they quickly graduated me up to stronger agents of chaos. Hellhounds, imps, chaos knights, a minotaur. And between fights, I left the arena and I found my favorite merchant of fried frog legs. I'd eat, I'd heal, I'd collect my payment, I'd regenerate my mental focus, and then I'd return for more, turning enemy after enemy into smoldering heap, praising my Lord Berwyn at every victory. Back then I was hopeful. Hopeful I would someday descend deep into the caverns and find the gates, close them for good, save the world. You know, hero stuff. It felt like Bloodhammer and I would never stop playing. We spent that year meeting at the library, where we would discuss strategies for dragon killing, recipes for hearthling bread, the proper crop rotations for rare herbs, etc. It felt like we were a team. I worried that he and I would grow into old age, and then one day we'd sit up in our rocking chairs and realize that we'd made the mistake of saving an imaginary world from evil instead of the real one. But Bloodhammer lost interest before me. I came to the library one day, and he wasn't doing the normal research. Instead, he was chatting with someone on the internet. He said it was someone we went to school with, and he showed me their messages, and it was clear that he loved her. Had I not been born in the sign of the wolf, had I not received those natural boosts to both my perception and willpower, I would have become enraged. I would have recited my arcane words in a jealous weakness and turned him to a pile of ash right there in the library. But I restrained myself, and I said nothing. Instead, I redoubled my efforts to close the chaos gate. Bloodhammer and I were growing apart. I eventually fell out of favor with my Lord Berwyn, too. I don't know how that happened. Once we'd been so close, but we too were growing apart. My corruptions multiplied. Thorns sprouted from my palms. I'd sometimes teleport at a moment's notice. And no matter how many times I brushed my teeth, my mouth smelled of eggs. These were all my natural corruptions. And to all this, Berwyn seemed indifferent. And I was annoyed by that. I prayed incessantly to Berwyn, and, understandably with time, Berwyn just tuned me out. The river was narrowing, and the banks were getting steeper. The surgeon was far off in front of me, and I was falling behind. He turned around to yell something at me, but I couldn't hear him. Ahead on the river, I saw something strange, something I'd never seen before. A perfect horizontal line. Just a line. And beyond that line, nothing. The surgeon approached the river's horizon, and then slowly and peacefully, I watched him and his boat just over the horizon. And completely disappear, shoulder hair and all. The surgeon had mentioned something about this to me while we were driving.
"It's just a small dam," he said.
"A dam?" I said.
"Yeah, it's just a small irrigation dam. You have to keep paddling. You'll be fine. It's just a very small dam."
He reminded me again.
"Just keep paddling. There's a huge wave at the bottom that will try and toss you back upstream. Don't let it."
We went back to listening to the radio. I was alone now, and everything was water and noise. My kayak redoubled its efforts to remove me from it. A wave of panic rose up inside of me, and I began to cry. I thought I was going to die. And so I did something there and then that I've never done before, and I've never done since. I looked to the sky where the one God lives, And I yelled, "God, don't let me die right now. Don't let me die. I'll never be bad again." And I said this over and over again. I said, "Don't let me die right now. Don't let me die. Don't let me die right now. Don't let me die. Don't let me die right now. Don't let me die." I rushed towards the river's horizon, and then I saw a sharp edge and a wall of mist, and I couldn't tell if the one God could or would do anything to save me this time. I was deep in a dungeon once, and I found the most beautiful thing. It was a rare sight. It was an entire forest of animated trees. I don't know what they were doing down there in the dark, but it was peaceful to see them all swaying there in the cavernous room, mumbling to themselves in tree language. I expected nothing as I strolled through, and then one of them suddenly took a swing at me with its giant arm of wood. Leaves tickled my nose as I jumped backwards. And then it came after me again, creaky but surprisingly nimble, and it angered me, and so I cast all my magical might into my hands, and when the tree came back around for another swing, it connected with my torso, and it knocked all the breath out of me. But I grabbed hold of the branches, and I spun around, and I struggled to whisper my incantation. And when it left my lips, the animated tree became just another pile of charcoal. And then I heard the terrible sound of trees screaming. The message was spreading across the cavern. And then instantly I was surrounded. They swung at me and I turned them to smoldering ash one at a time. And we fought this way for hours. I was on the verge of death, I was bleeding badly, and my mental power was exhausted. And so I looked up to the world's surface, up towards the heavens, and I prayed once more to Berwyn. My answer came a moment later, when a thundering voice shouted at me,
"Mortal, you are a nuisance. Give me my peace."
That day, it was my corruption that saved me. In the height of battle, I felt myself separating from the plane. And I separated into something liminal, where I could see nothing. And I felt nothing. And it wasn't even a nothingness, it was like a blackness. It was a nothingness of emptiness. A nothingness of nothingness. But it lasted for just a moment. And then suddenly I popped back out of it. And I was standing at the other side of the cavern, where I could see the pile of animated trees that had previously been beating me. I could now see them from a distance, and they began screaming their terrible screams as they hunted for me. But beneath my feet, I saw a staircase heading down, so I fled deeper into the caves. The river dropped out from under me. I felt a scraping on my legs and I looked down at a 7-foot slab of angled concrete. In the moment, I didn't pause to consider the surgeon's claim that this was a quote-unquote small dam. Relatively speaking, of course, he was right. This was no Hoover. This was no Three Gorges. But it was still a dam. And I was still yelling to the one god as I white-knuckled my paddle in every attempt to keep my bathtub of a kayak straight. I scraped my way down the concrete. And then when I reached the bottom, the wave hit me. It was a standing wave, the kind that's always breaking and never moving. It slammed into me like a 1,000-pound pillow, and it threw me back against the concrete. And then the dam threw me against the wave, and the wave threw me back again. Everything became cold and misty. My arms went weak, and I had no more strength to pray to the one God. And through my tears, I shamefully pictured myself being tumbled for eternity by the dangerous circular current beneath me. They'd find me there, 100 years later, just an old skeleton wearing a useless life jacket and tangled in the deflated remains of a terrible prototype kayak. I felt bad about calling in an undeserved divine favor. And more than anything, I regretted the Sears catalog. And yet, somewhere through the vapor, I heard a rumbling voice. It wasn't the one God. It wasn't Berwyn. It was the surgeon, yelling at me to keep paddling, which I did. And stroke by stroke, I broke through that wave and into the calm river beyond. And there, on the other side, was the surgeon, just laughing at me in a way that was neither kind nor cruel, just laughing. I don't know if he heard me crying and praying, but I slumped down in my boat, just shaking. We floated downstream together, and I spat some foul mucus into the river. It tasted like old eggs. We eventually dragged our boats back out of the water, deflated them, and drove back home. The passing hills caught our van's ever-lengthening shadow, while I silently looked for dragons flying through the clouds. I never did close the gates of chaos, though I did try with all my might. The closer I got to the gates, the more quickly I became corrupted and weak. My spells were not good enough, my god stopped answering my prayers, my companions all died or left me. My goals got simpler instead. Survive, find a place to call home, win back a bit of favor with Berwyn, treat the corruptions I already had, and avoid getting more. Eventually, though, I began to languish in my saved game file for weeks at a time. 1 year after we first found the game, Bloodhammer and I went to a math team competition together. And one night we were running around the hotel and he was chasing me, and I slammed a hotel door on him. The bottom of the door tore off his big toenail, and I thought it was so funny. And I didn't help him. I just laughed. It's still one of the cruelest things that I've ever done. Back when I still heard voices and thunderclaps, back when I still had dreams of hell, back then I had fewer corruptions, and now I have more. A back that likes to throw itself out, a left eye that likes to see magic, a hairline that thins in a way that I find unflattering. The one God seems indifferent to these struggles, though I have lost some piety since then. But the surgeon taught me that not all corruption is bad. I eagerly anticipate the day when my shoulder hair turns gray, the days when I laugh in the face of death, and the days when I'll crank the volume to Morning Edition when it comes on the radio. Years later, I opened up my saved game file again, and I found myself back there, back in the caves of my youth, not far from where I grew up. I walked those old halls again, remembering the times when I had more hope for heroism. I visited the old altar of granite and just sat there for a while, pain dripping from my palms, open sores caused by a lifetime of spellcasting and corruption. I suffered, but it felt nice to revisit the past and once again feel close to my God. And then I heard the sound of rustling, and it scared me. I stumbled backwards up onto the altar, and then the uncertain voice of a young wizard shouted, "Berwyn, accept this gift as a sign of my piety." And then a bright light, and then a misty feeling. Well, it's season 7 now. Beth and I have been working hard over the summer so that every other Wednesday we can drop a little nugget of audio weirdness in your podcast feed. We have episodes coming up for you about diving, fungus, raccoons, witches, nuclear fusion, you know, everything. But while you wait for these episodes, drop by our website, where we have, for sale, our brand new sweatshirt, which comes in many colors and has a message written on it that's appropriately vague. If you buy one, tag us on social media with a picture. You can get yours at our website, which is hbmpodcast.com/store. And there on our website, you can find out all about a great computer game that I used to play called Ancient Domains of Mystery. I loved this game, and I still do. I've been playing it recently for research. My character is a wizard named Noodle, and I keep dying. Music on this episode came from Cyrocell, Ahi, The Black Spot, and Circling Lights. Here Be Monsters is a part of KCRW, where Nick White is our editor and Kristen Lepore is our manager. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.